Coming up today, we have special guest Das Williams, County Supervisor for the Santa Barbara area. You do not want to miss this interview.
Buckle up, everyone. You are strapped in and ready for the Insurance Hour with me, your host, Carl Sussman, informing, educating, and entertaining Californians one policy at a time. This is Insurance Hour. Hello, hello. This is Carl Sussman, host at Insurance Hour. Thank you once again for being here. Remember, if you have any insurance-related questions, you can call anytime, 559-656-0317, or send an email to questions@insurancehour.com. Today, we have a very special guest. I'm excited to have him here, Das Williams, who is the supervisor in Santa Barbara general area. I'm going to give you a quick bio without embarrassing him. We were talking about this, and I said, you've done so many things. I could sit and do, 10 minutes just on everything you've done. And he said, don't do that. So let me just give you a little background on what he has accomplished. And then we'll just start chit-chatting about some of the things he's doing that are trying to help people in his territory be more prepared prepared to get better insurance, to be able to prepare their homes for wildfire and things of that nature. So, Das, and you correct me if I'm wrong on my data, because hopefully I've got it all correct here. So starting out back at the Santa Barbara City Council back in the early 2000s, moving on to the 37th District for the California State Assembly, and then currently serving as County Supervisor for Santa Barbara County Board of Supervisors.
That's all right.
Okay, so somebody did the research correctly for me. I don't look stupid. Well, again, the reason I wanted to have you here is, I'm a fan of Santa Barbara. I mean, I used to, as a kid, go to Cabrillo Street and Carpinteria, and all those areas have always been favorites of mine. And so
I live in Carpinteria.
Oh, okay. There you have it, right? And one of the first stations that the radio show came out on was KZSB, and we're still there right now. Hello, everybody at KZSB. We love you. And so when we're talking about insurance, and I tend to deal, I'm a little California centric because I'm here, obviously, even though we talk about insurance nationally. But I wanted to talk to you about things that you have done and things that you're doing to help people in that area deal with the new reality, the reality of what we're looking at when it comes to climate change and how it's affecting water, floods, water, fire, wildfire, everything surrounding it.
Well, first of all, it is obviously a correlation. Santa Barbara County is one of the two fastest warming counties on average temperature in the state and in the western seaboard. And correlated with that, according to the research of these two great researchers out at UCSB, has been increase in sundowner winds. And fall sundowner winds are really the fire weather. And of course, fire leads to more danger in flooding and debris flows. So our basic task is how do we get better at response, and how do we get better infrastructure for flood control, because we still have many creeks that do not have 100-year flood capacity in them. And so especially with Montecito, the big concern has been the firm maps and getting, essentially the current version of the FEMA maps and how that affects insurance. And the good news is the new maps are coming out soon and will reflect the changes in infrastructure that we've been able to do, including the large debris basin at Randall Road that we have been able to do. And give you an idea, the largest basin that we had on that watershed was only 10,000 cubic yards.
Sure. It's interesting to hear, because every part of the country really is dealing with this, the air quote, new normal, right? Those are two expressions I can't stand. I can't stand unprecedented. I'm so tired of hearing that. Can we have some precedented, right, at this point? And new norm. I mean, what is the new norm, right? I think we can all see literally with our own eyes, and that we are seeing weather that we have never seen before. There's no question about it, right? These most recent storms we saw in Southern California, I just sat and looked out the window for, as I'm sure you did, days. And it's not a little downpour or pause. It was just this deluge that just kept coming. So I think that to have someone that understands that, as you clearly do, and are taking proactive steps to try and help ready the community in every way possible to protect them, these are all things that are going to benefit everybody. It's going to benefit the community at large, which is going to help property values, all that other good stuff that we forget sometimes that really does matter, right? California is big on property, and your area has some of the most gorgeous some of the best parts of California, literally, to live are right where you are. So these types of infrastructure upgrades that you're talking about and that you're working on and have done are they almost fly under the radar. People don't realize that those things have a dramatic impact on their property values and what's going to be happening going forward as the insurance industry starts to get better regulations to be able to properly price according to risk versus, you know, the large, you know, brush everybody with the same general guidelines, which is what the laws require to some extent. Now, people that are going to be doing these things that we're going to be talking about to make their homes, you know, less likely to burn and to do things to protect their homes and be prepared in case there's storms are going to literally put money in their pocket because it's going to allow them to have better coverage, lower premiums, and all of that starts at the top. And that's where you are. So I applaud you for understanding and recognizing that, yeah, this is a thing. Right. Because a lot of folks just want to sort of bury their head in the sand and say, nah, it was cold the other day. You know, there's no global warming, you know, and you just kind of want to facepalm, right? That, you know, that's one day. You can't look at that, right? You have to look. I think I read somewhere last year was actually the hottest year recorded ever for the whole planet. So it's, and not by a little bit, by a significant amount. So I think what's interesting is people that are in areas where they have folks that have the ability to facilitate changes to the building codes, to the infrastructure, to the planning and things like that, and are forward thinking that get it. Those areas are going to be the best off as time goes by because they're going to be prepared for what I think is hard to argue against. What I hate to say it, the new normal is going to be. Now, I know you recently had a town hall, October, I think it was, just a few months ago. Can you tell us a little bit about what went on at that town hall and what your takeaway was and what you were hearing from folks?
Well, first of all, we had a great number of residents coming out and expressing the obvious frustration that most people in high fire zones are feeling everywhere across the state, which is that insurers are you know, dropping them, you know, discontinuing their insurance. We were also fortunate to have the insurance commissioner attend. And, you know, his hope is that the compromise that he and the governor achieved with the insurance industry would bring more places into an insurable state. Essentially, I would describe the deal as you know, we'll, you know, that the state government will approve rate increases and that the insurance industry will cover more areas in the difficult country.
It's a great summary. It's the sustainable insurance strategy, and we talk about it quite a bit. And what it's really doing is it's taking legislation that has been enforced since the 80s that prohibits underwriting, really. That's why I say guidelines that make the carriers literally have to live inside of a box this big, and it gives them the ability to look at all of these things. The things you're doing, the things you're advocating for, will actually make a difference. So a carrier can come in and say, oh, okay, this house looks good because it's done X, Y, and Z. This county, this area, this township has done things so we can underwrite based on that. So you're 100% right. I think that the guidelines that, and they're starting to roll out slowly now, are going to do what we need, which is bring carriers back to a place where they can actually underwrite. We forget that, you know, one house is different than the next. And as time goes by and people are becoming more proactive, right, with what they do to protect their homes, then they'll be able to have a lower premium versus, you know, the person that might be in an area that's not protected or they don't take preemptive actions to try and prevent certain types of losses that can be prevented, right? They're going to see higher premiums. So I would have loved to have been to the event, but I think I'm glad to hear that at least the understanding is that, look, we all recognize there's a problem. We all recognize we need a solution. And now we're actually starting to see that, you know, rolling out in small parts. As far as the industry goes, the people that I speak with in the insurance industry in general, I think the best way to summarize it is with what one exec said, and I won't tell you who, but he says, we see light at the end of the tunnel. We just hope it's not an oncoming train.
Right.
and so it's sort of one of cautious optimism, right? Because right now we have a situation where we're close to 87% of insurers that were writing policies for property insurance in California 5 years ago are not. They've right. either literally gone out of business. They've lost so much money, they have no money left, or they're in a position where they're restricting coverage because they're literally bleeding cash, right? The analogy is, you know, if you take $1,000 in, but for every $1,000 you have to pay out $1,200, that doesn't work very well. It doesn't last very long, right? It doesn't enable people to, it doesn't enable the carriers to stay in business to pay the claims. So, right. And being in that situation is not good. So it's not even just a matter of rate increases, but it's being able to have the carriers reward the homes, the communities, the Safer for Wildfire Protection, which I'd love to hear your take on. I know you're big, you love it like we do. It's going to reward people and communities for doing things to try and lower their exposure to wildfire. And by doing that, of course, more carriers will want those risks, right? It's a supply and demand and a competition. If you're an insurance company, remember, they don't make money unless they write insurance, which is another funny one I always hear that, oh, the carriers, they just stop because they want more money. Well, they can't make money unless they write policies. That's kind of the way insurance works. You write a policy and you collect premium and you make money based on your, you know, how much you're paying out versus what you're collecting. So anyone that thinks that a carrier is just willy-nilly not writing, just remember they're not making money if they're not writing insurance. It's sort of full stop.
It's obviously hard for folks who have had to go into the unregulated market where prices are astronomical for their insurance to grapple with it. But what policymakers, I think, of all ideological stripes are realizing is that there really isn't bad guys in the regulated market at this point. It's just that the regulated insurance pool, their costs have gone up astronomically. It's well documented the costs have gone up, but the rate increases have lagged behind, and that makes it very, very difficult for them to do business, which makes it difficult for my constituents to get insurance. And so, you know, I think it will be a better situation if we balance that out and that we allow, as you mentioned, people to benefit from if they harden their home against wildfire, if they are creating defensible space. And we have great work done in conjunction with the Fire Safe Council and our fire departments locally to promote that. But it really is going to be important for folks to take steps in their house and in their neighborhood to reduce wildfire risk. That is the way forward. What the challenge here is now, it's a policy challenge, is can we make the changes both in our own properties and society-wide to grapple with the challenges of the new normal, right?
I'm sorry, I made you do the air quote thing now too. You can't help it, right?
Oh, I can't help it. I do hate that phrase. And I'll give an example. One of the challenges is for the flood control, for county flood control. You know, we're a county on the South County. It's about half the county, 200 215,000 people or so.
And just for people that don't know, what county we're talking about?
We're talking about Santa Barbara County, South Santa Barbara County. The flood control account for South Santa Barbara County is assessment on property taxes that's so small that we take in about $2.5 million a year, you know, thereabouts. And just the repair and cleanup from the storm a couple weeks ago, we think will be $5 million. And the storm last year, between streets and flood control, $77 million, and we haven't gotten received FEMA reimbursement for that yet. So you can see that it is an unsustainable assessment, right? That we can't keep on spending 10 years, 20 years worth of the account every year or every other year. Either we need to raise the assessment to be current with the times, or we need to figure out other ways. Thus far, we've been lucky because of having federal disaster declarations to be able to do flood control work with great reimbursement. But we have to keep on looking at new ways, because otherwise we're not going to be able to armor and increase the capacity in such a way as to be in a safe place.
Who would have thought that we were expecting this? You know, California is always about wildfire, and now all of a sudden there's something new, and that sort of came out of the blue, right? That these storms, these unbelievable storms, and I won't use the names. They can't just call them storms anymore. But you know, they're, you know, the I'll give you a hint, the R word. You know, it's the atmospheric. It's like they can't just call it rain anymore or a storm. It's this, I'll say it, atmospheric rainstorm. And I heard pineapple, some other. I mean, they love these phrases. But at the end of the day, you're right. You sound a little bit like a lot of the folks that I talk to in the industry, where they're saying we can't spend what we anticipate to happen every 10 years, every year. It just financially doesn't work. We have to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the Safer from Wildfire program and some of the things that you're doing to try and help folks that, you know, get information about what they can do with home hardening.
California's insurance market can be challenging, but Sussman Insurance Agency knows the way. Trusted for two generations in home, auto, and personal insurance. Call 877-411-5200 or visit sussmaninsurance.com. Navigate with confidence.
Hello, hello, and welcome back. This is Carl Sussman with Insurance Hour. Thanks for sticking around with us here with my special guest, Das Williams. Before the break, we were chit-chatting a little bit about the new normal and all these things that we have to get used to as being the way things just will be going forward. And I wanted to talk a little bit more, and I wanted to give Das a chance to talk about the Safer from Wildfires program that I know was covered pretty heavily at the October event that the insurance commissioner also attended, and also get an idea for people that are with us now on what resources are you making available to help the average person find out what they can do to make their house safer, whether it be from wildfires or from water damage or anything like that?
Well, the county partners with the Fire Safe Council here locally to have this information campaign and to give essentially technical assistance to residents that want to make their properties and homes more fire safe. And, you know, obviously some of the work predates the program. I mean, we've been doing chipping programs in many of the high fire neighborhoods for some time. This is more granular, i.e. that people, from the Fire Safe Council will come out and help you brainstorm what's going right on your property and what is not.
Free of charge. So
free of charge.
So people can literally reach out and have an expert come to their home and say, here are things that you can do.
That's right. And we really encourage people to contact our Fire Safe Council. That's our partner. And obviously our fire marshal Rob Hazard works with them extensively. We have, good technical assistance in the fire department as well. If the Fire Safe Council needs something, that is beyond their level of expertise.
Just to make things easier before I forget, why don't you give everyone your information? Because I want everyone to be able to have you sort of as a central person to go to since you have all of this. And we'll be sure to put it in the show notes as well. So if somebody wants to have somebody come out and do exactly what you're talking about, which again, mind blowing for me, right? Who wouldn't want to do that? Right? The best claim is no claim for everybody, right? That's what lowers our premiums and keeps, damage. I mean, claims mean loss. That means something bad has happened. So if you can have somebody that's an expert in helping you prevent a loss come out, I would say you should be jumping all over that. What are some good ways for people to reach you and you can help them sort of navigate who to reach out to?
They can email me personally at dwilliams@ countyofsb.org. That's County of Santa Barbara, but we just do countyofsb.org. dwilliams@countyofsb.org. And, some of these calls are not, they're not easy. When the fire marshal makes recommendations in evacuation width, that's hard for residents. This is not easy stuff to adapt to a greater fire danger, but it's something that we have to do together as a society. We want to be able to have relative safety in our communities. I'll tell you some other great program that we're working on is we're going to go live with an integrated borderless dispatch of fire and EMS services in this county in a couple months.
You need an acronym for that one. That would be how many letters?
So let's just say that in some counties, they already dispatch resources together. But in other counties, each different fire district dispatches resources separately. And there's a lot of times when the closest available resource to you is not the one that's on your side of a border. And so we're taking all of our fire districts, and we in the county took the hit and built the dispatch center. And we're now going to have an integrated, screen where people can see whether what resources are available, what resources are already on a call, and always get the closest available resource to you. And of course, that's enhanced by the fact that we have advanced life support paramedics on most a vast number of our engines in the county. So all county engines, not all city engines, but all county engines are already ALS certified. And that's important too, because it means that you have a level of expertise on a fire engine that's equivalent to the level of expertise that folks would be having on an ambulance.
That's interesting. So they're all ALS certified now.
In the county, yes, we have one personnel on each engine.
Wow, that's incredible. That really is. And for people that aren't familiar with what that means, I suggest you go and do some research, because to be able to have that type of expertise on every fire truck and have that level of access is tremendous, right? You buy a house and they list the school districts and all these different things, and I'm thinking, wow, this would be something buried in the lead too, right? That this type of protection is available with this level of expertise in the county. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. When is that something new, or is that something that you put together over time?
It's something that the department has prepared for over years, but this move towards borderless dispatch has happened under my watch. I'm not exclusively responsible for it. My colleagues on the board of supervisors.
Come on! I'm throwing you a softball.
but I have been a part of that movement for some time. I've advocated that statewide we need to look at fire departments having a stronger role in the health side of response. Because we want to understand weaknesses in our ambulance response and strengths. I've advocated that departments have more ALS certified personnel so that if necessary, the fire department can function in the role of an ambulance service provider. In some places it really, may make sense. This is not a desire to restart the ambulance wars, but it is a desire to really get to a better response and to understanding that our regulatory environment is about average responses. And there may be pockets in a community that does not have that high of a response and wanting to improve that.
Ambulance wars. Yeah, you forget that sometimes there's money involved in this, right? It's not just about who can get there first and who can provide the best service. And then there's the issue of where do you take people, right? And you have the hospital wars and all of that. It's unfortunate, but you know what? The as unfortunate as that is that we have that aspect to deal with, the good news is that we have some of the best response times anywhere.
That's right. And so we are very fortunate on that, but it's also, there's things that we could do to not make everything as high cost. I firmly believe that with health transfers, in many cases, you could do that with basic life support personnel and not have to dispatch an ambulance every time. The idea that we need to have an ambulance to take people in assisted care to their health appointments. Maybe that's a place in the system where we're not being efficient. I think tiered response is also something that we need to be doing in EMS or ambulance service. Is making sure that the most important health emergencies are responded to with basically everything. Throw everything at that. But health appointments, maybe we can do that with a car, with some basic equipment and a BLS certified personnel.
Das, we got to wrap up, but I have to just tell you, I'm so impressed with your level of knowledge and just the fact that you are so involved on such a granular level with all of these things. A lot of times when I'm speaking to people that are in elected office, it's much more of a general view of what's going on. You're giving me specific roads and areas of that have been damaged by flood waters and cleanup and this, the level of specificity that you have is very impressive to me, truly, and I'm not just saying that. So,
thanks, Carl.
I think that the folks that your constituents should be very, very happy to know that they have someone that really is hands on, getting their hands dirty or wet or whatever the case may be, right? To try and keep everybody in as good a position as possible. So I invite you to keep having those gatherings as well. You're going to always be getting good feedback from people that and what they're dealing with. And hopefully, as the insurance market starts to turn, we'll be in a better position for you to not have to say, I know it's terrible, and here's all that's available. But it'll be more shifting to, I know it's really terrible. Things are getting a little better. Try this and you might be able to have a better outcome, or try that and you might have a better outcome. Is there anything that I haven't touched on that you want to be sure that everyone's aware of that you're focused on?
Well, I think that people need to understand that there is a limited budgetary capacity of most public agencies. They can't take responsibility. Most counties, though we clean out our creeks, most counties do not clean out private creeks, and we only do it when we think that there's going to be an impediment to flood control. So it's really a partnership between private owners and government at this point, just because of that really most governments have to budget for the big stuff, like debris basins, stuff that we know will work. And the cleanup and alterations of those basins to make sure that they're retaining rock and tree and letting water go downstream. And so, you know, I think it's just important to remember that this is a partnership. Local flood control agencies, especially Santa Barbara's, is going to be there for you. But we have to figure out how to do this together.
And an ounce of prevention, right? It's good to know that they will be there in the event that they have to do cleanup. But in the meantime, if we can all work together to try and make that potential, you know, clogging and debris mess less by, you know, a plethora of things, from keeping the trees trimmed to the defensible space to all these other things that go on, it will make everybody's life easier, right? It means less work for them, means less budget spent, means more money for other factors.
And to remember, this is not, doesn't carry as much water as this. So wide banks in your stream is really what you want to promote. And a lot of people go, well, then I might lose a little bit of property along the creek side. You know, if you have a gradual wide bank, that property is going to be usable all the way down to the middle of the creek, instead of this channelized sort of using your creek just sort of as a storm drain. We can accommodate much more flow, and it slow down much more flow with wider banks in the creeks. And so we're really integrating that with our flood control master plan, and hope other communities can do it too, because we can have better flood control if we work together.
Absolutely. Das, thank you so much again for being here. If you can give us your contact info again, website, email, phone, whatever, for folks to reach you, let's do it. Let's be sure they can find you.
Great. dwilliams@countyofsb.org. Again, that's dwilliams@countyofsb.org.
Terrific. And if anybody forgets, or they know, hey, Carl had that guy on from Santa Barbara, you can always ask me. I will get you to him. And you can, of course, you can reach us anytime, 559-656-0317, or questions@insurancehour.com. Das, thank you so much. And I look forward to meeting you in person. I always forget that this is such a strange medium we work in, right? We're talking. Have we met? I don't know. Does this count as meeting? Somebody started saying that this is an e-meeting. Nice to e-meet you.
To e-meet you, Carl. It's an honor to be on the show. And let's keep on educating people about insurance and about public safety.
You got it. Thanks so much. Wow, the time just flies by. We have to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
I'm sure many small business owners out there have been hearing a lot about fractional CFOs, but aren't quite sure what they are or how they can help. Let Semaphore guide you and help fulfill your fractional CFO needs at semaphorehq.com. We're likely the solution to your business struggles, and you didn't even realize it. First, I'll explain what it's all about. A fractional CFO is a part-time, on-demand financial expert who can help you with scaling and tracking your financials and making smart financial decisions. A fractional CFO is more than just a number cruncher. They are a strategic partner to the founder and a trusted advisor to the growing leadership team. If you are interested in learning more about how a fractional CFO can help you scale your business, call or text us today at 720-766-8869. That's 720-766-8869. Or check us out at semaphorehq.com. That's SEMAPHOREHQ.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Insurance Hour with me, your host, Carl Sussman. Remember, you can call in with any questions you may have at 559-656-0317. And of course, feel free to email your questions to questions@insurancehour.com. You can also dial #250 on your cell phone, use keyword insurance, and get an agent right away to help you out. So I thought I would take a few questions that I've been getting via email over the last week or so. Been a little bit busy with interviews, so we have not had a chance to do as many of the call-in questions, and we have not had as much opportunity to actually answer them on the air. So without further ado, let's go through some of these. I grouped them by life insurance, since this is a topic that we don't typically cover a lot, and I have started recently getting a lot more questions about. So let me jump right into that. The first question is asking, and I'm paraphrasing everything, is why do we need life insurance? Now, you know, other than being morbid, right, there are a lot of reasons that financial planners, for example, and I am not a financial planner, disclosure, that will recommend having life insurance. And the primary stated goal, per se, why did it initially come to fruition, was to replace your income. So if you're to die, you generate income. Somehow that income generation goes away. So if you look at something simple, like there's a, you know, husband and a wife, and the husband is making X dollars, the wife is making Y dollars, and the husband dies. Now, how does the wife survive on just the Y dollars? So the idea behind this was, okay, let's have a policy where if something happens to this X dollars income, we have a product that will fulfill that need. Now, you might be saying, well, if that's the case, then why doesn't life insurance simply pay out monthly, like salaries come or something to that effect? And the answer is, you can get life insurance benefits and you can have them paid out over a period of time. However, competition gets involved. More people would prefer to get a lump sum of a payout versus getting it paid out over time. In addition to that, life insurance is also turned into a tool for doing other things other than simply replacing income. It's used to build an estate. For example, you know the old saying, you want to leave your family with more than they had, right? Maybe you want your children to have more money or have a larger starting point than you did or that you do. So people are purchasing life insurance to create an estate, literally create an estate. So that would obviously be much better if you're getting that in a lump sum so that it can be diversified and invested and sent over to different places to try and generate future wealth for the family that you're leaving. So life insurance is not just about leaving money to replace your income. It's utilized to create an estate. Another reason people have started using life insurance are for tax purposes. You may have heard about something called the death tax. The death tax has to do with a form of taxation that occurs on your estate. Depending on how much and when, if you are to die or when the time comes, your estate has to pay federal taxes. You basically can't just have an unlimited amount of money and leave it to your heirs and not pay taxes. I don't want to get off on a whole tangent on this, but this one has always kind of rubbed me wrong. You pay taxes when you earn money. Your employer pays taxes to pay you money. You pay taxes as an employee to earn money. You pay taxes when you make an investment and get a return. You pay taxes on growing that return in the bank. You're paying taxes on every which way you possibly can. And now you finally have what you would think is just your money to do with as you please. As it turns out, it's not that simple. You actually have limits to how much of your money you can pass on to somebody else without having to pay more taxes on it. Now, again, not a CPA, disclaimer. There are exemptions for things like spouses, I believe, and things of that nature. But in general, there is an issue of taxation that happens with people that are trying to leave certain amounts of money above a certain threshold. And I keep saying it depends because it changes based on legislation. There were times in the past, I believe, where there was no estate tax. And then there were times when the threshold was relatively low. So it moves around. It depends on a lot of times who's in office, what type of legislation gets passed and pushed through. But in general, life insurance is utilized as a form of tax preparation. So if you're leaving an estate and you do the math and you figure out, or your CPA says, hey, you know what? When you die, there is going to be X dollars due in estate taxes. Boom. You'll have a life insurance policy, if you do, that will pay out that lump sum, take that check, send it to the government, and you're done. Now your money is able to be passed on and you've paid the taxes on it and everyone remains whole. I personally think this is unfortunate that we have to, again, spend money to be able to transfer wealth. I think that we've already spent enough money to earn the money that we have, and we should be able to pass that money on. But again, that's my two cents for whatever it's worth. Insert hate mail here or whatever it might be. But we've gotten a little off track. So make sure you just understand that life insurance is not just about something morbid like, oh, if you die, I want there to be money coming in. No, you have a value. You're generating income, number one, and there are these other uses that I'm talking about here. Now, I will just say one more thing about this. I can't help it. When you lose a loved one, it's terrible. It's really, really terrible. And it depends on, obviously, who this is, how close you are, but it's 99% of the time, I think we can safely say it's a bad time. You go to a funeral, you go to the person's house, you do whatever you're going to do, and then this one person walks in with a check for money. And I've had to do this as a broker over the years, and I can tell you that when you end up being that one person that shows up, first, of course, everyone looks at you and they're saying, who in the heck is this? Nobody knows who you are, right? I'm the insurance guy. I didn't know the person that well. I was certainly not family or close friend. So you show up, everyone is grieving, everyone's upset, and I have a check. And there is a feeling of, oh, well, okay, that's a little something good, at least in an area of bad, in a time of sadness, in a time of pain. So there is an element of, how do I say, not happiness, but it's nice to be able to know that if you have a life insurance policy and you hope people are grieving for you, there is going to be a little glimmer of something to make them feel a little bit better. And you know what? Money never hurts. All right, I'm going to leave that alone. Forget why we have it, why we need it. All right. Now, another question came in talking about different types of life insurance. And what's interesting about this is some people think about life insurance and they think there's just life insurance, period, end of story. What they're actually thinking about is something typically called term life insurance. Term life insurance is a type of life insurance policy that you get that lasts for a specific period of time, or a, ready for it, term. As long as the policy is active, if death occurs, the policy pays out, subject to provisions and certain things that may be excluded. Initially, at any rate. And again, that's for another time to discuss. So let's just take an example of term insurance. You might purchase a term insurance policy for $500,000. That's how much the face value of the policy is, $500,000. What is the term? Well, that's part of the product that you're purchasing. Is it what's called an annual renewable term? What that means is every year the premium will go up based on your age. Another type of term might last for 5 years, where they will average your age now over a five-year period, and they will give you one level premium that you will pay for that entire five-year period. You can do the same for a 10-year term, or a 15-year term, or a 20-year term. Yes, I'm going to go a few more. 25 and 30-year. 30-year terms tend to be about as long as you can get for a term insurance policy. So what does that mean? That means you can buy a policy today, and the premium will be exactly the same, even though you are aging, and even though you might get sick, or you might get a disease, or you might be in some type of an accident, or something might happen during that 30-year time period that would make you uninsurable, let's say, or your risk factor would simply be higher, and you would require a higher premium. Instead, you're able to lock in that amount of money, in this example, $500,000, and it remains the same. Same price, same $500,000 for the entire 30-year period. So when people first, when they think about life insurance, that's usually what they're thinking about, which is you buy a policy, if you die, you get paid, period, end of story, mic drop. And that is usually referring to term insurance. There are no bells and whistles to it. There's no cash accumulation. There's no refund. You pay your premium, you have the policy, and you're done. Now, there are other types of life insurance as well, and I want to touch on two others as soon as we come back.
Sussman Insurance Agency, trusted for generations in navigating California's complex insurance market. For help with homeowners, fair plan, auto insurance, and more, call 877-411-5200 or visit SussmanInsurance.com, your friend in the insurance industry.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. This is Carl Sussman, and you are tuned in to Insurance Hour. Remember, I am always taking your questions at 559-656-0317 and at questions@insurancehour.com. If you need help right away, you can dial #250 on your cell phone, keyword insurance, and you'll get connected with an agent right away. Before the break, we were talking about life insurance and different types of life insurance and what they're used for. I left you with term insurance, which basically, again, to recap, you pay your premium during the term period. If death occurs, you're paid the death. Well, you're not paid. Your estate or your beneficiaries are paid that death benefit, and off you go. Now, what happens if you're saying to yourself, well, what if I want insurance longer than 30 years? Or wait a minute, I spend all that money during 30 years, and if I don't die, the policy just ends and I'm out that money? The answer is yes and yes, for the most part. So there are two other types of life insurance you can purchase. And these are general categories, and of course, there are other variants of these as well. I'm giving you sort of a more holistic look in general. There's something called universal life insurance and whole life insurance. Now, these types of life insurance policies are similar insofar as you have the ability to keep them for an indefinite period of time, depending on a bazillion factors. Now, what is the difference? Let's talk about universal life first. Universal life, and again, it in and of itself has multiple flavors: variable universal life, index universal life, straight universal life. There's all sorts of things, and we could do, you know, entire shows on each of them. And by the way, if you're interested, let me know, and we can do that. Universal life is a product where you're going to purchase the policy and get a face amount, just like before. However, a portion of your insurance premium is going into a cash, we call it, bearing account. And that cash bearing account is going to earn some form of interest. And this is product specific. If it's a fixed product, it might be a fixed interest rate that you're going to be getting on that portion of the premium that you're paying. If it's an index product, it might be paying you interest based on the return of some financial instrument like the S&P 500. So you're paying your premium, some of it's going into the cash, some of it's going to just pay for your policy. So you actually have a, if you want to look at it, a forced savings account that's in place that's slowly getting bigger as time goes by and earning interest. Now, one major benefit of this is as you are growing this cash and as you are earning interest on this cash, you are not, N-O-T, getting taxed every year on that growth. Again, not a CPA, disclaimer, but you're not getting taxed every single year. So you're getting compounding interest. You're getting your money and the growth of your money every single year compounding with additional interest growing. This is an advantage over a standard savings account for the most part, right? Because we know on those accounts, we pay taxes every year on the growth. So this is a financial instrument as well as a life insurance policy. Some other advantages to a universal life policy is that, remember, I promised you'll be able to keep it longer than 30 years. Again, without getting complicated, you have the ability to keep the universal life insurance policy as long as you want, as long as you have sufficient cash value in the policy and the policy provisions are met. This is, again, a lot more complicated than I'm making it sound. There are a lot of policies that you may end up having to pay one premium to get the policy started, and the premium might increase over time depending on factors such as what's happening with that cash value, what's happening with interest rates. There are lots and lots and lots of variables with this. So you want to definitely speak with an agent, be sure that you ask all the right questions and find out what you need to find out. And speaking of variable, there's a type of universal life insurance called variable life insurance. This is a securities registered product, and this has to be sold by an agent that also has a securities license. And that's because it is going to be investing in the stock market, in different types of investments. So that makes sense. You would need someone that's licensed to sell some form of security. Now, this can give you the potential for larger returns. And at the same time, you know how it is, higher risk, higher reward, low risk, low reward. So the potential for that policy to vacillate in value and potentially have you in a position where later in life you have to pay a higher premium to keep the policy in force is greater than, let's say, what we're moving on to next, a whole life policy. This is that third category that I wanted to talk about. Now, whole life insurance is a type of policy. You could look at this as sort of being the granddaddy of permanent insurance. And the granddaddy of permanent insurance says, okay, here's the premium. Here's how much interest we're paying. This is how much cash you're going to have. This is your death benefit. You have all of this information right up front. You don't have to worry about what the stock market does. You don't have to worry about what interest rates do, what the feds might do. None of that matters. You simply have your policy and you can have a snapshot of where you are at any given time just by looking at a chart. Again, I'm talking in general, but this is how whole life works. Now, whole life insurance is great for people that want to have that security and not have to be always paying attention and worrying, and they want to be sure, come hell or high water, that they are going to have life insurance while they are, that they're going to have a life insurance policy until they die. Now, certain whole life insurance policies, if you reach a certain age, will what's called endow. Certain policies will continue until you die. Again, these policies all vary. Some of them will have an age 100. Some of them will have an age 110. Again, talk to your agent or broker. Find out what it is that you're looking to have. Make sure that you get that policy and you get the type of policy that exactly fits what it is you want to have. Nothing is more frustrating than when I'm talking to a customer and they purchased a life insurance policy many years ago and it wasn't what they thought. And now they're coming to me for help. And unfortunately, first of all, they're, let's say, 10 years older. So even if we wrote them a similar or the exact same policy right now, it's going to cost a lot more money because they're 10 years older. That happens. Or what is even more frustrating, they'll be looking to get a new policy and they've developed a health condition. Let's face it, we're human. As time goes by, we develop health issues. It just sort of happens with aging. Maybe they've come down with, I don't even want to start pulling things out of my, you know what? There are health issues that occur, and they might make you either uninsurable or they might make you a higher risk, and therefore your premium rating would be higher. So not only are you older, you have a higher rating factor, so the premium would be significantly higher. So what do these people do that have a life insurance policy that's not performing the way they thought it would? They want to get a policy that does. Well, again, first, they have to figure out what in the heck's going to happen with the old policy. They have to figure out what in the heck happened to it. Did they get the wrong information? Is there a mistake somewhere? Who knows? But fixing it can be a real challenge because don't forget, again, you're older. There could be potential health issues. There are all sorts of factors that come into play when you're trying to what's called replace a life insurance policy. It's so tricky and you have to be so careful that as a broker, there are specific, they're called replacement forms and processes that we have to go through anytime we're taking an existing life insurance policy and writing another life insurance policy. There are specific hoops we have to jump through and forms we have to fill out to be sure that everyone is on the same page and that everyone understands what's happening, what they had, what they're getting. We have to be able to compare it and contrast it with what they had and what they're getting for them to be able to see and be sure that they are getting this time, hopefully, exactly what they want and they're not going to be surprised somewhere down the line. The takeaway from this, to be honest, get an expert. Get someone that writes life insurance, that knows the product, and as importantly, has access to multiple products. I'm not a big fan of going to a broker that writes for one life insurance company that's sort of a one-trick pony. You want someone that can go out there and find the absolute perfect life insurance policy that fits your needs exactly. I do want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I know insurance is not necessarily the most sexy concept. It's not the most exciting thing in the world. It is important that you understand what it is you're getting, what you should be looking for, red flags, you name it. You just need to know more than you used to. Things are more complicated than they used to be. If you have any questions, please reach out to me directly. You can email your questions to questions@insurancehour.com or call and leave a voicemail at 559-656-0317. Educating and entertaining Californians one insurance policy at a time, this is Insurance Hour. The show is dedicated to Shamrock Papa.